Brave New World.
Hello and welcome to a Brave New World programme. I'm John Harrison. The Australian government has recently published a foreign policy white paper which isolates China as being some kind of threat. And we would like to know exactly what this threat is, what Australia intends to use as a bargaining chip to involve other countries in a possible new alliance, and what it means for China. To talk about these issues and other related issues, I'm very glad to welcome to the programme Jeff Schubert, an Australian visiting professor at Moscow's Higher School of Economics, who is now resting in the sun back home in Aussie land. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, John.
Now, the news is that Australia has released this new foreign policy white paper. In a few words, can you tell us what that's about?
Well, it is the first white paper in about 15 years, and it has been described as providing the framework or the blueprint for Australia's foreign and defence policies over the next decade. And there's two, I think, very salient, important points to be made about it. One is, it talks about strengthening Australia's military alliance with the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Australia has an alliance with the US and New Zealand. It's called ANZUS, Australia, New Zealand and US. And the white paper talks about strengthening that, making it deeper and broader, and including the stationing of more US military facilities in Australia. And clearly, a lot of the language in this document is aimed about containing China.
Mm-hmm.
And China gets several mentions in several places, but also the background is clearly China. China is becoming economically and militarily strong. It is seen as being somewhat of a threat to the rules-based international order. Now, this document, like other documents which Australia has released, and in fact also the US talks about, they talk about the rules-based international order.
Mm-hmm.
And that means the order of maritime security and various things which was established in the post-war period under the leadership of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So all this is about making sure that the prime position of the United States in the world in political and military terms is maintained, and in the face of what is perceived as Chinese cavalier expansion.
Yeah, okay, so you've put this very clearly, thank you very much. And I would like to ask you just again, looking at this at a very sort of very broad geopolitical level. I mean, on the one hand, we have Australia, which is doing pretty well. And I think you know as well as I do that one, the reason that it's doing pretty well, is, relatively speaking, is because it has China next door and it's able to,
that's right,
to trade with China. I don't know, you know, what the levels of the commodities import export are, but I'm sure that China is doing pretty well out of that. Now, and then we have a situation where China is sort of perhaps getting up, feeling its strength, flexing its muscles a tiny bit, and everyone goes, we don't want to do, we want to protect ourselves against them. Now, is this some sort of mass paranoia or happening, or is there something based on fact that they are reacting to some actions that China's taking?
Well, firstly, Australia doesn't have China next door, but what it does is have sea routes to China, and therefore it's been relatively easy for Australia to export large commodities, energy, iron ore, etc., to China. I mean, compared to Russia, Russia has China next door, but transporting commodities, particularly iron ore, over land is much more expensive. And I think we've discussed this before. So Australia was able to take advantage of China because of the sea routes, as it took advantage of the growth of South Korea and Japan by providing commodities, but also it was doing it at a time when Russia was looking towards Europe after the collapse of the Soviet Union. Now, Australia, I keep trying to tell people in Australia that it's very important to learn lessons from what happened with Russia and Europe. And very precisely what I mean here is after the collapse of the Soviet Union, NATO expanded and talked about expanding to include even Georgia, which was nowhere near Western Europe. Russia had very legitimate concerns about this and feared, legitimately, in my view, that maybe eventually there would be a NATO base at Sevastopol in the Black Sea. So, but Russia's very logical concerns were ignored. And consequently, when the occasion arose, a decision was made to annex, and I'll use that word, annex,
sure,
Crimea. The Russian response also was a bit emotional in a sense because they got carried away, Russia got carried away with Donbass region and eastern Ukraine. So what I'm saying here is because of Russia's legitimate security concerns were ignored and rational expressions of that ignored, the thing, whole thing got out of control and became very emotional. So Russia now has a fairly emotional policy towards Europe. I contrast that with Russia's generally very pragmatic policy towards individual Asian countries. Russia is not being aggressive, does not have bad or terrible policies or aggressive policies with Japan or Korea or China or India.
Mm-hmm.
It does have this idea of a greater Eurasia, but I think that also is part of the emotional response to what's happened on the European side of Russia's borders.
Okay.
When we get to China and Australia, I think, sees China's growth in power, sees China taking some, I think, in many ways, legitimate steps to ensure that it has security in the South China Sea. Australia gets a very becoming, or some Australians, and particularly those in the security defence establishment, get emotional about this, and they think, well, we have to get closer to America now,
yeah,
to stop China.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're trying to bring in other countries, including India.
Right, and this is what is on the cards now with this new so-called quadrilateral security dialogue.
Yes, the idea first arose about a decade ago, but then was abandoned by the Australian government.
Okay, let's talk about this after a short break.
Okay, fine.
Don't go away. Welcome back to Brave New World programme. Today I'm discussing the so-called quad defence structure, which Australia is now proposing, with Jeff Schubert, a visiting professor at Moscow's High School of Economics. Welcome back, everybody. Now, we just started talking about a new defence proposal network structure between some of the countries in the South Pacific to counter a perceived so-called threat from China. Jeff, now, to me, you know, I'm sitting in Europe, and it's quite clear to me, because I have a totally different perspective than the guys down there in your part of the world, that there seems to be some sort of chaining, bordering process going on whereby China is now kind of declared a big threat to the world, big nasty China. Look, it's going to gobble up all our countries, all our economies and everything. Let's build some walls around it, and let's start with defence partnerships. Now, is that a bit of a naive view? Because I know that Chinese do have to export all their goods. Well, most of them, the ones they sell in Europe and the States through the Malacca Straits, a small 20-mile wide channel of sea. And I understand completely that they feel paranoid. They feel threatened.
Well, firstly, I think the greatest threat the Chinese feel is not regarding exports, it's imports of energy.
Okay.
And though much of that energy goes through the Malacca Strait,
yeah,
which is between Indonesia and Malaysia. But also, in the Indian Ocean, China is building pipelines in conjunction with Pakistan and the Myanmar, or ex-Burma, and it wants to import oil to China through those pipelines.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of imports, it's not only the South China Sea, it's the Indian Ocean. China needs security in the Indian Ocean as well as the South China Sea to import energy, because China is not energy rich. It has a huge internal market, and its exports to some degree can be replaced by exports of goods, can be replaced by production of services for the internal market.
Yeah.
But energy imports are crucial. Now, the various policymakers in Australia and the US and Japan have been pushing this idea that Western policymakers should not just think about the Pacific, they should think about the Indo-Pacific, that is the Indian Ocean and the Pacific Ocean, or the Eastern Pacific Ocean as a whole, as an area of great security interest.
Mm-hmm.
The Japanese are particularly keen on this because it means that a grouping, say, of the US, Australia, India, and Japan are concerned about Chinese actions in the East China Sea as the South China Sea. So a grouping, a security grouping, or even a dialogue grouping, something where people talk about issues but don't necessarily put their military facilities together, benefits Japan enormously.
Sure.
Japan has
Thank
nothing
you.
To lose. It does not have a good relationship with China.
No, thank you very much for pointing this out, Jeff. I mean, it almost sort of goes, what you're saying, to endorse the point of view that now we, international powers, actually not doing anything particularly new, but we're using economic levers, we're using international dialogue, we're using international conferences to group together to form economic partnership between countries that are linked to defense policies. And thus we're able to bring extraordinary pressures against individual countries. And I'm talking about China. Now China is being isolated and it's being declared to be a threat. Now, why is it a threat? It's only defending its own interests. It's defending its right to import materials and to export goods. Is that a threat? I suppose it is a threat on an economic term, but it's not a threat in a military term. But what we're seeing is a military response.
I think that's basically right, that it is the Chinese efforts to control their seaways, their import energy needs, is being seen as a military threat.
Yeah.
The other issue here is, I think, that India really has no interest at all, or very little interest, in issues in the South China Sea or the East China Sea. That is, Australia's relationship or exports to China or Japan or South Korea are really not relevant to India, because India doesn't export much to them.
Mm-hmm.
But the attempt is being made to call this an Indo-Pacific, Indian Ocean, Pacific Ocean issue, and to rope India in to this. And I know that while many people say that India is on board, I think there's a fair bit of my own discussions with people in India, there's a fair bit of concern about being roped in. I mean, India does not need to have a security relationship with Japan in any sense, because it has a very weak economic relationship. In fact, in my view, India would be better off trying to come to some border resolution security agreement with China.
Yeah.
Now, Russia did that. Russia had a border dispute with China lasting many years. And it became in the interest of both of them eventually to say, look, this is silly. Why do we have this border dispute? It's just not needed.
Mm-hmm.
India, in my view, should be doing as much as it can to come to such an agreement with China. Now, I think India has a particularly strong bargaining tool here. If India can dominate the Indian Ocean, seas just around it, which are crucial for importing oil through Chinese imports of oil through Pakistan, or imports of energy through Myanmar, and also are crucial for Chinese imports going to the Middle East across to the Malacca Straits, India has a very strong bargaining position to say to China, look, we'll protect you.
Yeah, India's the most important country, isn't it? I mean, we're seeing that everyone's trying to get in India under control. I mean, look at what Russia's trying to do now. Russia is really trying to make sure that relations between our two countries are healthy, as they always have been. And my question to you is the states now and some other nations getting pretty jealous of this good relationship between Russia and India, and perhaps introducing some wild cards? You know, let's introduce this idea of China being a threat, and therefore you need to be protected. So let's create a new military alliance called the Quadrilateral Security Dialogue, and so on, so on. And I'm asking this question as a global security scientist, not as a politician. I don't have an opinion. I'm interested to hear your angle on this.
I don't think that the Quad idea, the Quadrilateral Security Dialogue issue, is related to Russia. It's definitely related to China.
Okay.
And the Australia, Japan, the US are looking at China.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't necessarily understand the relationship between India and Russia, and they don't necessarily understand how the countries within Eurasia see relationships. Now, I'm not saying that everything is nice and rosy between the countries of Eurasia, but the last thing they need is conflict. And I'm not a great fan of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which includes China and Central Asia and Russia, and which Pakistan and India just joined. Yeah. But nevertheless, there are some signs these people do want to talk to each other. And this attempt to bring India into this quadrilateral alliance, in part, I guess, is partly a reaction to the slightly warmer relationships within Eurasia. And maybe there's also an anti-Russian angle, though I don't think it's particularly prominent.
Okay, well, I'm afraid we're out of time. I'd like to carry on this dialogue because we're getting into some extremely interesting themes that I'm afraid that mainstream media is not picking up on. And because it's Sputnik, it's this fringe sort of group of people who talk about things which I think are really interesting. And I hope that it's interesting for you listeners. And Jeff, thank you very much. And I hope you enjoy your sundown there while you can before you come back to Moscow. It's a little bit chilly here. And carry on your good work at Moscow's High School of Economics. Goodbye. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.